Hey Blenders, on this week's show, Justin Lin was replaced on Fast X, Moon Knight has ended, and we get into Doctor Strange 2, spoilers and non-spoilers.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome to episode number 212 of Real Blend, a podcast that feels the need.
The need for speed.
Oh, you're doing this?
I thought we were supposed to do it. I thought that was
all together.
Well, no, now it's ruined. Now we can't.
Wait, enough.
No. Why don't we all do a four-person classic Maverick Iceman high five?
All right, that sounds like a good plan. Ready?
Right, three, two, one.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that went really well. They thrust their palms at the camera.
On this week's show, Justin Lin has been replaced on Fast X. Moon Knight has ended, and we're going to update our tier list. And of course, Doctor Strange 2 is finally in theaters this weekend, so we have a fun and spoiler-filled discussion coming your way. The reason why we are making Top Gun jokes is because, as you can tell from all of our backgrounds, if you're watching on the YouTube channel, we're all in different locations. We're in San Diego for the Top Gun world premiere and red carpet. We have Jake Hamilton sitting in his Mr. Rogers chair, ready to welcome the crew to the show. Jake, how are you?
It's funny, for those of us who are watching via YouTube, all in a replica type room, but all of our shots look so different. It's very reflective of our personalities, I think.
Yes, that's true. Kevin McCarthy, reflective of his personality, is in a tuxedo.
Is literally in a tuxedo.
Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, look, we were all scrambling because just to give this a bit of a timestamp, we're all in San Diego right now, obviously, for Top Gun. And we can already confirm this because we already did it. We're going to have Joe Kaczynski joining our show closer to the release of the film, Tron Legacy director and Oblivion. Phenomenal guy. But we're all here because we're all hours away from potentially leaving to go to the red carpet for the USS Midway flight deck for Top Gun Maverick. So I got all dressed up because I thought we were going to go right from here, which we are. But that's why I'm all in my tux. So anyway,
and I'm going to wear my Spider-Man t-shirt on the carpet because
you should.
Just what I do. If you're watching us on YouTube and you've seen all of these amazing backdrops and fancy clothes, hello. Thank you for joining us for episode number 212. If you want to head down, give us a like and a subscribe. You know that we appreciate that. We know. Shout out to the notification crew. I kind of love this. On Friday mornings when the episodes drop, there's a group of people who call themselves the notification crew, and they start to post comments underneath the new episodes. Like, they show up right when it drops.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they start to listen to it right away. Yes.
Absolutely love it.
So I see you all, and we all appreciate you, even though Jake didn't know you exist.
I did appreciate whoever left the YouTube comment about how handsome I am. That is a YouTube comment I got behind.
As Gabe pointed out, it was your burner account.
and I appreciate myself for leaving that comment.
Audio listeners, if you want to get in on all the fun of this video form, head to youtube.com/RealBlendPodcast. Have you signed up yet for Real Blend Premium? Let me tell you what you get with Real Blend Premium, guys.
Tell me, Sean.
Well, you get an ad-free version of the show, whereas the rest of the folks have to endure ad reads and a couple of new ads dropped in. You get a newsletter that I write, including one coming this week. So it should be sitting in your inbox as you're listening to the new episode of Real Blend. And in addition, you get an extra segment of the show every Monday. We never quite know how many of us are going to be able to make it to this one. Last week's episode apparently was just Gabe and Jake having a grand old time.
It really is a fun. And I'm trivia. Not trying to like rag on you guys for not being there, because everyone has things. But like, we had a great time.
So sign up for, if you want to go to the description of where you're listening right now, it'll tell you how to sign up for Real Blend Premium. We want to get to, like we said, the news of the week, which is the replacement of Justin Lin on Fast X. I was convinced, 100% convinced it was going to be Vin, and I'm really pretty disappointed that it's not
but,
Vin.
But is it, you know, in the same way that we talk about how, particularly for these big action films like Mission and Top Gun, that Tom is kind of an honorary co-director, whether the directors want to admit that or not, because he anyone that has the ability to make the degree of decisions that Tom Cruise is able to make is kind of, whether the studio or anyone wants to admit it, makes him co-director. In a way, is Vin kind of co-director on these Fast movies?
I guess so. Well, let's give the answer. The answer, the replacement for Justin Lin is Louis Leterrier.
Yes.
Who most people will know from, he directed The Incredible Hulk. For Marvel, he also did the first Now You Can See Me, or did he do both of them?
Definitely did Now You Can See Me, yeah.
He did the first one?
I believe John Chu did one of the Now You See Me's.
Oh, that's true. He did the second one.
It really bothers me that the second one's not called Now You Don't.
Yeah, that is a really
That's some Hollywood studio stuff. They're like, but how will they know it's about the same movie?
And, I
gotta be honest, no one went and saw the second movie, so clearly it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It is fascinating, though, because, like, yeah, you're right, because if they just started promoting a movie called No, You Don't, I mean, I guess
or now you
that would work.
Now You
yeah,
Don't.
Yeah, Now You Don't, sorry. It would work.
Hold on. I know that Louis Leterrier, keep vamping, because I know he has one other.
He did Transporter.
He did the first two Transporters.
Okay.
He did The Brothers Grimsby.
He also did this masterpiece called Clash of the Titans.
He did that, too?
And I say masterpiece completely sarcastically.
Yeah. Right. So he has...
Yeah.
He moved to TV. He did two Netflix series, which I think have been really popular. The Dark Crystal, and then there was another one, Lupin or something like that.
So he's been consistently working on very high profile projects.
Yeah, and he has another movie that's coming this week to Netflix, a French language film.
Oh, wow. He's done way more stuff. I got to be honest. Whenever I read that headline, my initial reaction was like Jimon Hansu in Guardians. Like, who?
Ooh.
Who?
Ooh.
He's got a pretty... But like, at this point... Any director who signs on for a Fast movie has to accept that they have to deal with Vin.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a viral video that I've seen pop up on my Twitter where it was on Vin Diesel's Instagram, where he was taking a selfie video of him and Justin Lin like a week before Justin Lin left the project.
Right.
I'm telling you, that video, and again, that you could read into whatever you want to read into, but that video itself, it looked like Justin Lin was kind of just done, like already. Like, I mean, you got to watch this video, and again, there's so much speculation, and we don't know what's true and what's not true. But we've heard so many times over the years about Vin Diesel on the set, and we know him and The Rock had some issues and things like that. And we saw some reports this week.
Kevin,
about,
couldn't you also say? And I don't think we're saying anything that's not very well known in this industry, like. We've gotten a little taste of what we've heard about Vin, and just in terms, like, I don't think we're breaking any rules by saying like he is infamously late to junket interviews,
and that's fine. I mean, and for people like listening to this show, you know, Jake and Sean and I all do junkets, and generally speaking, like the talent is on time or 5 to 10 minutes. When you go to a Vin Diesel interview, you generally know you're going to be
you block
later.
Off the day.
Right. And that's, you know, that's just what kind of, you know, within the industry of what we do for a living. So Jake's kind of making that bridge of like, okay, imagine that, but on a bigger scale, on a set, right? Where everybody
when you have
is
an entire right. company breathing down your neck when millions right. of dollars per every couple of days are being spent.
I mean, and as again, you guys are saying, we often feel bad for the junket crew.
Sure.
Right.
That is sitting around yeah. waiting.
Yeah.
And it's important to clarify, obviously, this is all just like we're talking about our own experiences and speculation, but at the end of the day, Justin left this project. I mean, that's the news. It seems to make sense in that aspect. I don't know if we'll ever know exactly what happened.
Yeah, what was it? The reports were from like it was anonymous sources close to the production. Yeah.
Close to Justin,
right?
Yeah, close to Justin Lin. Yeah. Mm.
And we were and Gabe pointed this out before we started the show, and I don't know who to give proper credit to, but this was a report as well that allegedly Universal could be losing $600,000 to $1 million
yeah.
a day.
That was they had asked someone who was familiar. It wasn't specific to this production. They didn't give the number specific to this production, but it was some industry insider who is familiar with when there's a director change mid-production, and that's like an average that usually costs at that scale. So, is $600,000 to $1 million a day.
Back
a
to
day.
Louis Leterrier.
Lost.
With all due respect to Louis Leterrier, and we mentioned these movies that he's worked on, I just think the idea is that like I don't get excited to hear that like a new Louis Leterrier movie.
Well, here's
coming.
The thing, though. You wouldn't get excited if it was anyone, because he's getting hired because he knows how to run a production of that scale.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's right. the creative decisions are made. He's not going to come in and change much other than directing actors.
Yeah, like what
moment.
Direction is he really going to be doing? This is kind of what I said last week on the show. It's like they were already in production, and I'm not knocking Louis Leterrier. I'm just it's more of like by the time he steps into that directing chair.
Yeah.
Every major decision we would assume has been made right. in terms of like character choices and script and things like that. And yes, they could change that along the way.
And
but it's almost as if
stopped.
Like, yeah, right, they just right, kind of right. like they just kind of place him into the grand scheme of it all. And he just kind of operates. I think that's kinda, it's what it sounds like.
Who knows?
Me.
I mean, we can only assume so far. I think, we'll hopefully this is something we'll know more eventually. I think. These kinds of case studies, I think, are always fascinating, whether however many years it takes or a Blu-ray feature or whatever, to hear the stories about like what happened, not just the Lin sort of conflict.
Is he dreading the junket already?
Well,
he knows everyone's going to have to ask
less
about
that.
It.
It's just, I'd love to hear the stories about, again, less about the Lin controversy thing, but more about like him stepping in. Okay, what happens? Like, what does a director do when they step in mid-production? What can they change?
I mean, look at how long ago was Solo? I mean, it's happened since we've been doing this
show.
But
that was a full, they were wanted to redo. This is they're not trying to redo anything. Yeah. They just need somebody to
they're
finish
trying to pick
it
back
from
up.
What it sounds like.
Yeah.
Because like I said, the second gig. Unit hasn't stopped. And I think they're just trying to get him caught up to speed, no pun intended, as quickly as they can so that he can take over.
I guess it's a foolproof situation, because if it bombs, it wasn't really your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if it's really good, it's because you stepped
gonna
in and saved
you're
it.
Welcome, billion dollars, though. That's the thing about these franchises. Yeah. It's probably just going to make $1 billion.
Right. Also, I mean, it's one of those weird things where, and I said this on the show last week, like Justin Lin is well known in our circles, like just because we know the filmmaking industry. Like, and to me, Lin is synonymous with Fast and Furious. And to me, when his name is on something, like when he came back to do, he came back for 9. After stepping away for 7 and 8, I was so excited because he directed some of my favorite Fast and Furious films from 5, obviously, and I love aspects of 6. I even
four
really
is terrible,
9.
Though. 4 is terrible.
4 is bad. No, I actually like 4. I actually liked 4. 4 was the one they were going underneath the caves.
Yeah,
and everything
was
cool.
I think that's one of the weakest ones.
I like that one, but anyways, but Justin Lin particularly, like, to me, he's important. But like to a general audience, like you're not going to see the new Christopher Nolan movie here. You're going
it's
to Leterrier the new Fast
show now, though.
Right, but it's also like most people probably don't know who the director of a Fast and Furious film is.
Sure,
most people don't know who any director is. Yeah. Like they're
Spielberg.
That's what I'm saying. It's a rare occasion. Nolan, Spielberg. It's the rare Tarantino. Like most people have no idea. There are a lot of people who you say Tarantino and they don't know.
A lot
movies.
Of people know who James Cameron is, and he's going to be plugging himself into Avatar for the next 5 to 6 years, at the very least. And this week, we got to see our first look at Avatar, The Way of Water, when Kevin and I trekked ourselves out to a theater here in San Diego to see the trailer, which they looped. So this is a lot of fun. This is a lot of fun when it shows you going to a theater with Kevin. Because the trailer was set to be looped for 30 minutes. They were going to show it continuously for 30 minutes. And the first time it screened, I didn't notice this, but the aspect ratio was off on the trailer. And it's not that it was still being played, but what was it, Kev? The screen was like there was like curtains that were blocking still.
Yeah, so if you go to a movie theater sometimes, like when they're about to show a film in terms of like whatever how it's supposed to be projected in 185, 235, 239, whatever, the screen will open and show the screen. There's like a cover that like can block,
which is a little bit see through because you could see the action taking place behind
right.
it.
Right. So it was almost as if like they basically projected the film and there was like a foot and a half on each side of the frame that we were missing that was being covered by some cover. So they ran the trailer on a loop. I think on the fourth or fifth time was the moment when they opened up the screen and we got to see it in the proper ratio.
No sooner did the first screening end when Kevin said, now can you show it with the right aspect ratio? Yeah.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude, I'll never forget this. When I'm the kind of guy, like I remember for Scorsese's Hugo, I took my parents to see it in Newport News, Virginia. And I remember Scorsese in the interview telling me that like in terms of 3D working properly, the bulb on the projector has to be bright enough so that when you put your glasses on and it looked dark as hell. So I ran out of the theater, went to the projectionist and said, I need you to turn up your bulb because Scorsese said so. Wow. That's what I literally said to the guy. And then in this case, I did yell out.
I'm just going
to
start doing that for like everything. Like, hey, I want free guac because Scorsese said so.
I don't know if you guys ever looked at these up. These are really kind of fun to look up if you're into this stuff. But there's like classic notes that directors have sent to projectionists over the years.
Sure.
But even like decades back, like hearing like a filmmaker say, I need you to, or Kubrick would say, you know, make sure you project my film in this ratio at this whatever. And it's like, it's a cool thing. I mean, always
going back to
notes.
like didn't Hitchcock tell theaters, don't let anyone in, like once Psycho starts, don't let anyone in, like no late admissions.
Well, and which I love.
Yeah. It made me think about this too. Like, when James Cameron turns Avatar over to the masses, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he can't control that a screening in San Diego didn't open the curtains enough, right? And if he knew, it would annoy him to no end, right? But he has no control over that. At that point, it's out. Because in Kevin's defense, so it played three times through before they fixed it. And when they fixed it, it was a different experience. It really was a different experience. Oh, yeah. It opened it up more, and we appreciated more Pandora, and it was impressive.
Now imagine how terrified filmmakers are when they're making a movie for streaming only, and it's how big is the TV? Yeah. Is there a light coming through the window? Are they on their phone? Do they even have speakers that can play the frequencies that we mix this for? Like,
it's scary. Like, to put your work out in the world and base it on a projectionist who's going to project your film the right way. It's like,
sure.
Well, at least that's a little controlled, you know?
Yeah.
Joe Schmo's setup in their dorm room, who's like trashing a movie that they saw on a 19-inch monitor.
So do yourself a favor, though. Yeah. Anyway,
sorry.
I was just saying, do yourself a favor and look up these old director notes if you can. Find them, like, just search like director notes to projectionists, and you'll see kind of how adamant. It's a long paper about like, here's how to do it. Here's how to, you know, it's pretty cool. It's cool.
So I mentioned last week that I had seen this footage at CinemaCon. I will mention that the 3D to me was significantly better from where I was sitting, because in CinemaCon we were in a large auditorium. I was up in the balcony and to the left. So the 3D looked good, but not terrific. In this instance, we were, you know, dead front and center, looking right up at the screen, and a lot of the visuals that were coming through the screen and the layers that were weaved into the action stood out a lot more to me. I want to hear Kevin's opinion of it, because to me, like, the look and feel of it still just feels like Avatar. I mean, it looks like the Na'vi, you know, and in Pandora, and there's not a lot of plot detail that's given in this footage that we saw. So it just looks like a little bit more of the same.
Can you guys tell a 15-year difference?
No,
I could not.
That's a little disappointing to me. If I'm being, like hearing you guys say it just looks like Avatar is.
Yeah.
And just is such a terrible word to use for James Cameron. But like, you're telling me 15 years later, it still looks the exact same.
So I have some pushback to that. Sorry. And I want to get to your point, Kev. But like, it looked great. Like, why? I'm not worried about it not looking like it did. I want the story to be good. Like, that's been my conceit all along, is like, well, OK, if he's taking this time to work on story, mm-hmm. the way that he took time to work on the technology, then let the technology be what it is. Even though he has worked on, and I think, Kevin, you'll probably get into the technology that he did work on for this, for the underwater stuff. I'm okay with it looking like Avatar if the story's better. For me. Like, that, that to me, that's the bigger problem.
My timeline with Avatar is fascinating because when I first saw it, the first movie, the 3D and the visuals were mind-blowing, but the story was, did nothing for me, and I was ultimately disappointed in the film. But as that film progressed over the years and I, like, rewatched it at home or whatever, I don't think that CG held up in a realistic way for me over these 15 years. So to Jake's point, I also, you would expect 15 years later that this would look mind-blowingly better, in my personal opinion, because Cameron is a technology genius. Terminator 2 still looks better than, I think Terminator 2 looks better than the first Avatar, just because Terminator 2 blends CG and practical, and sure, there's some dated shots, but the guy, when T-1000 comes out of the floor in the hospital, that looks better than, in my opinion, any shot in Avatar. It holds up more than that. And I think at the end of the day, you're making four more of these. You expect this to be astounding. The trailer had no story that I could capture. I watched the trailer seven times on a loop. And it was just visuals. So if you're putting an Avatar trailer out on Doctor Strange film, in my mind, you're trying to sell your film. And I know the name Avatar is already a selling point, as Jake was saying, but it did nothing for me. Like, I mean, yeah, the 3D was cool. The depth of field looked great. I mean, he invented these cameras for the first Avatar that give a really good sense of depth of field. You can see into the frame. It feels like you can put your finger into the actual world. But it looked like another Avatar film. And I know it sounds like a knock, but it,
you just until expect, we know what the story is.
Yeah, but don't you? You would expect it to be bigger and better. I don't know. I Terminator 1 to Terminator 2. Look what happened in that.
That's
7
an interesting
years.
Point. That's a very interesting right? point. And the story was better.
Right. Terminator 1 was like full blown practical, cool animatronic, Stan Winston style. Same thing with 2, but they blended the CG in.
T-1000, man.
Right, but T2 was such a jump and a necessary jump. And that was only 7 years from 84 or whatever it was to 91 or 92. What happened between 2009 to 2022?
Yeah.
Reserving my judgment.
I am a James Cameron. I will love everything he does. I'm not a huge Avatar fan, but I trust in him to deliver. It's just that teaser did nothing for me. It didn't move the needle for me.
Really? We are recording this on May the 4th, which is an unofficial Star Wars holiday. So we should talk about the Obi-Wan Kenobi trailer that just dropped in anticipation of a Star Wars celebration, which is coming up in Anaheim, and the arrival of this new show. Jake, I know you said you were a bigger fan of the first trailer and the way that it used Duel of the Fates.
Yeah,
but what did you think about
that? I'm a sucker for nostalgia. Like, that's cheating, because like the reason I love the first trailer so much is whenever it kicks in with Duel of Fates, and then it kicks in with Battle of the Heroes, the score from episode 3.
Yeah.
I just love that so much. This is just a little bit more of a pure story, and like, here, you know what, the thing that excites me about Obi-Wan, the reason that I'm genuinely jacked, is that it feel, and look, I get the idea that they're making up these stories as they go along. Like, it's not like this thing happened and they're telling, you know, but this feels like it genuinely organically happened and we're just finding out what happened. It doesn't feel like a story they made up for Disney, like Boba Fett. Kind of felt like not so much a thing that happened, but they just sort of made up this Boba Fett story. It, you know, it felt a little bit more like fan fiction, and then we just got to watch it play out, and isn't this fun?
It was the Patton Oswalt thing of him crawling out of the Sarlacc
pit. Yes, very much. Very much. Obi-Wan, and I hope I'm making sense with this, because again, I understand that they're always just making these things up. Obi-Wan, though, it feels like it genuinely did already happen. And it feels like we're just getting a look at this moment in Star Wars history. It feels organic. It feels real. It feels like a story that genuinely does need to be told. Because what did happen when Obi-Wan went into hiding between whenever he stumbled across a young boy named Luke Skywalker.
Sure, sure.
Like, that's a story that needs to be told. And, like, this idea that, I'm getting chills thinking about this, that we're going to see that Obi-Wan-Darth Vader showdown, that, I mean, did you guys ever see that fan-made video of what the Obi-Wan Darth Vader lightsaber fight from A New Hope would look like if they had like today's stuntman. Because, you know, in the end of New Hope, it's very much two older guys just kind of hacking away at each other. Yeah. And someone remade that scene, but using like the style of fighting that they do from Phantom Menace all the way through Revenge of the Sith. Like very like, it's impressive. And it's just like, damn, like, it would have been cool to see that. Of course, they couldn't do that back in 1977.
Right, right.
I think we're going to get that.
Okay, and, but let me ask a question, though.
Yes.
Can they do multiple seasons of Obi-Wan to lead up to? Because when we see Luke through the binoculars, he's still a kid.
Yeah, he's a child.
So you could do a couple of seasons before you hand the baton over to Alec, essentially. Yeah.
They never say never, but the trailer, I did note that the trailer specifically says a 6-episode event.
But so does, I mean, leading up to Moon Knight, it was very much a, like, this is, like, Oscar Isaac didn't sign on for MCU.
Sure.
This is not, you know, and not to get into to spoilers, because I don't want to ruin it for Kevin, but, like, the end of Moon Knight very much implies that we're going to see Oscar Isaac again in the MCU, or we're going to see another season of, like, you don't end a season like that and not come back. So
we'll get to later, but I see what you're saying. Like I said, never say never, but they're very specifically
I think they're covering their ass because it probably kind of depends on Ewan McGregor. It depends on whether or not he wants to come back and keep doing that. So like, I think right now you don't commit. You just say like, isn't this fun? Isn't this a good story? But I just, honestly, I'm genuinely jacked. I'm more excited about this than any Marvel thing that there's been in a while.
So two questions.
Yo.
One, at the end of the trailer, it shows Vader being put in the suit.
Yes.
So are we going to see Hayden like as Anakin at all?
I think so. Well, I mean, if anything, I think we could see Darth Vader just with his helmet off.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. I think we're going to see a scarred, burnt up, gnarly.
Like Return of the Jedi style?
Yeah, but just like, that's what, you know, there's some
that's
really
older,
great
though.
There's some really great like fan fiction like drawings of like what like when he still looked like Hayden, what he would look like with his mask off and just burnt to hell and just all kind of like, you know, think of that moment when he leaves him on the side of that lava river in Mustafar.
Yeah.
Like how just completely and
but doesn't the suit keep him alive?
The suit keeps him alive, but like
he can remove it.
I mean, if it's all like lungs and stuff, you know, like if it's just this, if it's just, keep in mind the mask from his mouth to the top of his head comes off.
Okay, gotcha.
And the rest of the suit, I think the whole suit is what keeps him alive.
Well, and he has that little chamber that he stays in when
like the back to tank kind of thing.
Back to tank. So I'm sure it's gonna be him in and out of that at least.
Do you think Darth Vader uses a sleep apnea machine?
Definitely.
I think he does.
Yeah, without.
I think he is a walking sleep apnea machine.
Someone needs to find this out.
My dad uses those, and his favorite joke is like, "It's like I'm Darth Vader. I'm like your father."
Yeah, I want to know if Darth Vader uses a sleep apnea machine, and if Miles Teller got whiplash when he was filming the plane scenes in Top Gun. Those are the two things I need to know.
I did ask Miles Teller if anytime he sits in front of an instrument, does he have PTSD that J.K. Simmons is going to come out and just slap the hell out of him. But no, I'm genuinely jacked. I hope you guys are too. You know, for those of us, I think we can openly say that we're doing interviews, but we don't get to see it early.
No,
so we're gonna see it. How long? Okay, here's a question. Now I know we have to move on. How long do you guys think until Vader shows up? I don't think we see him first episode.
Oh, I think first episode.
You think so?
Yeah. I think so, definitely. Even if it's the very end, I think first.
Especially
episode.
If he's in the trailer. If they already gave him in the trailer. I also want to give Disney Plus a credit. I love the way they did the Disney Plus logo at the end. Did you guys see that?
Yes.
The lightsaber to go. Like it was. That was cool.
I honestly, I think they should. I don't know why they shouldn't, because I don't think you can overuse Vader necessarily. Yeah. I think it would be great if he was like throughout the whole series, like what are they called? The Inquisition? Is that what
If
they were constantly coming back to him with, you know, orders and like he was sort of playing that mastermind behind that side of the plot throughout every episode, I'd be so in. I'd take that so much more than just another like here's one fight with him and a silhouette. Like,
can I ask you guys a quick question? So you guys watched the animated series, right?
Which one? Clone Wars?
Which one is the one that shows the face-off between Obi-Wan and Darth Maul?
Yeah, Clone Wars.
Okay. I've always felt like that's such a great moment to think about, but I've always felt that animated fight between them is a little lackluster. It's a great conversation between the two, and then it's basically one swing, two swing, Darth Maul's dead.
Sure.
And I've always kind of thought, like, yes, even though those series are canon, I wouldn't mind seeing that read. We talked about multiple seasons of Obi-Wan. I wouldn't mind seeing that scene redone in live action with a little bit more of an oomph to it.
Wasn't Maul in Solo?
Mm-hmm. Very briefly, yes.
That's right.
It was going to be set up for more Solo sequels, which obviously didn't. So,
but he was Darth Shopping Mall in
Solo.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. Yeah. But like, do you guys think that they would like redo their own animated scenes?
Sure.
Definitely. In live action? Because yeah, I really want to see Ewan and Ray Park go head to head, even though we've already seen it. But at that point in the series, Obi-Wan, it's got to be later, because Obi-Wan's already looking like Alec Guinness by that point.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, the casting of Joel Edgerton is so spot on.
Well, he's in Revenge of the Sith.
No, I know, but like, just, but it just, it,
he
like,
does
just,
look like Uncle
just
Owen.
Just seeing the images in that trailer, it, I mean, I it's so yeah. exact.
And he kind of nails, I don't know, forgive me, I don't know the actor who plays Uncle Owen.
I was like,
he nails, because the actor who plays Uncle Owen in A New Hope has kind of that rough and gravelly voice, and he does right. kind of nail that. Oh, I'm telling you guys, it's going to be great.
When I saw, like, there was some, I don't know what it was about that shot, but when that popped up, I actually yes. thought it was A New Hope again for some weird reason. Just
Are you excited
it looked,
about it? Are you excited about Obi-Wan?
I'm excited about it only because I'm a huge Ewan McGregor fan.
Sure.
I think he's
the best part of the prequels.
I agree with you. Him and this is one that I'm fascinated by. I really am. And I honestly, I'm just trying to figure out, because The Mandalorian was one that I got into because I naturally fell into loving it. But Obi-Wan is a character that I am interested in learning more about personally. And so, yeah, the trailer looks great. I mean, we are in a bit of a fatigue period right now, and I think we're going to see a little bit of that this weekend with Doctor Strange, just in terms of like how much Marvel, how much Star Wars we're getting all at once, and whether or not we need a break in between. We need to miss these characters or miss these franchises a bit before we take them on again. But Obi-Wan seems to be coming at a time where I'm actually interested in it.
Yeah.
But I have experienced fatigue on both Star Wars and Marvel.
Yeah, I wanted to talk Marvel fatigue when we got to Moon Knight.
Yeah, especially when we get to Doctor Strange, because I just wonder, like, you know, especially after how No Way Home just came out, it was just there. We just had a whole movie with Doctor Strange, basically. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about it.
Before we move on, I want to put something on record, because we talked about how Obi-Wan could potentially transition and hand the baton over to A New Hope. And I had a thought about Better Call Saul.
Well, I haven't started this season yet.
Well, that's okay. This is not spoilery. But we, PJ and I, when we finished the most recent season before we watched the new season, before we started the new season, we went and watched Saul's first appearance in Breaking Bad. And his very first scene, he's walking into an interrogation room where Badger has been caught.
Yeah.
And the cops are interrogating Badger, and he essentially comes in and he's just like, stop talking. What are you doing? This is my client, kind of thing. And I want the very last scene of Better Call Saul to be him outside of that door.
Yes.
And saying, I got a client, I got to go, some kid named Badger. And
did you ever see the movie Red Dragon?
Yes.
It's a really good, if you've never seen it, it's actually, it's directed by Brett Ratner, but it's a really good Hannibal Lecter movie.
I saw it a long time ago.
The end of Red Dragon.
Ray Fiennes.
Well, it's after all the Ray Fiennes stuff, and it's Hannibal, like, in his iconic cell. And the guy who's like the warden that he ends up eating at the end of Silence of the Lambs, like, walks in, like, after everything, all the madness has happened with Ray Fiennes and Ed Norton and all that sort of stuff. And he comes up to Hannibal Lecter and says, there's a young, pretty woman here from the FBI that wants to talk to you about something.
Okay.
And Hannibal doesn't speak to him. And he kind of just goes like, okay, I'll tell her to go away. And he walks away. And all of a sudden, Hannibal raises his head and goes, what's her name? And it cuts to black.
Oh,
and
really?
I always thought that, I'm getting chills. I always thought
that's cool.
That was so great. I thought that was such a great, and it's very similar. And that would be a great, very similar to Rogue One and A New Hope.
Yes. I'll keep this quick because, like, Sean brings up an interesting point. I interviewed Odin Kirk the day before he left to shoot the final season of Saul.
That's cool.
I was talking to him and he was literally leaving the next morning. And I said to him, I was like, dude, I was like, these shows, so many TV shows end in such a dark way. I was like, don't you feel like Saul deserves some type of, like, redemption? And, like, because by the time we get to Breaking Bad and then the beginning of this series, he's at the Cinnabon. He's like, his whole life is ruined. He's had to change his entire life. And Odenkirk was so emotionally invested in trying to get Saul to come out on top, at least, yeah. or to because he's been through so much. And yep. I'm kind of hoping, I know happy endings are hard to do and it's hard to stick the landing,
particularly for these characters.
But I feel like Saul has earned the right to try and get a second chance because of everything he went through with his brother and the guys and Breaking Bad.
You mean like Nebraska Saul?
Yeah, I just want to see him go off and be okay. I don't know. It's a really brutal thing that guy's been
through. Vince Gilligan doesn't deal in that.
Well, you know what's funny? Odenkirk was like, I think the people who are writing this show don't agree with us on this, but yeah. I would like to see this happen. Right. I was like, but I can tell you it probably won't.
Let's take a quick ad break to pay some bills, and we'll see you guys on the other side.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
And we are back, starting to talk about Moon Knight, which had its season finale, not series finale, even though at one point Marvel tweeted that it was a series finale. Jake and I were talking about this at breakfast this morning about how it feels like the way that Moon Knight ended, and because we don't know necessarily the full plans for Marvel in their Phase 4 and beyond, I don't need this character to have a second season necessarily. I think it's now he's been established. His backstory and his origin has all been filled in. We kind of know his powers or the extent of what Oscar Isaac is able to do with him, and now they can use him in other places.
Can we? Should we put up a spoiler warning before we get into details sure. about that?
Yeah, let's do that. So we're going to talk about not just the finale of Moon Knight, but the entirety of the season. So if you feel like you are behind and haven't caught up and are concerned about learning, you know, specific ways that the series ends, skip ahead to our This Week in Movies, where we're going to get into Doctor Strange. So it's a little heavy Marvel as we get into the season. So moving forward, and now we're talking spoilers. This feels like a character that probably doesn't deserve, is not going to get his own movie. But Marvel is now at the point, I was sort of saying this to Jake, where characters can crisscross constantly, you know, and like the new Spider-Man movie can feature Doctor Strange, or the Doctor Strange movie can be heavily emphasized by Wanda appearing, and the Guardians will be in the Thor movie. And so Moon Knight feels like one of those characters that's just going to show up in someone's film. And I think Mahershala Ali's Blade makes the most sense, the way that he is kind of a grounded, you know, street level hero, the way Daredevil would be, or the way Spider-Man might be considered to be. And with Marvel moving forward, there's so many cosmic characters, from the Guardians to Captain Marvel and the people who are featured in the Marvels, where Moon Knight wouldn't necessarily make sense. So I'm glad he's part of the world, but I think it's going to be a bit of a challenge to find out where to fit him because of the way that he interacts with the different characters. But, you know, it fits a little bit to some Black Panther side of it too, because they talked about the ancestral plane and the Egyptian, the influence of the Egyptian gods.
I caught that.
It could also feature a little bit into the Eternals, because the Egyptian gods talked about when they were all in their temple together and the different avatars of the different gods, where they said, hey, we kind of agreed we were not going to interfere, you know, with the humans and Khonshu. You're the one who's stepping in and judging all of these people based on vengeance. It had a sense of the Eternals, too. Like, we've been around for a really long time, and this is how things work. Yeah. So there's some
which
rich
is a
history
great sort of right around for the common fan complaint, which is like, wait, where were you the whole time? It's a really great sort of like, cop out's the wrong word, but it's a really great, I guess, explanation as to where they were.
It's a necessary evil. You know,
yes.
They couldn't,
yeah. And actually, I actually like the whole idea of like you're on your own, like we're not interfering kind of thing.
I would agree.
Like, I'm totally cool with that.
So I thought that this series, and Jake, you might disagree, needed all six episodes to cover properly how complicated Moon Knight is as a character, because you have to explain his DID, and you have to explain the difference between Steven and Mark, and then also Jake, who we meet at the very end of it. And if you rush through that, it's possible. I'm sure it's possible, but I appreciated the time that was spent with each of them. For them to catch up narratively, to figure out how they weaved together. Now, because of that, it meant that there wasn't as much Moon Knight in the series. Sure. And that's a knock on it, and I can't argue against it. But I thought we got enough of that in the finale, and I never lost interest in the story. Did it hold your interest all the way through, or how did you feel about it?
I got to be honest, this very much falls under the umbrella of my feelings about a majority of the other Marvel shows outside of Loki, which is, could have been a movie. Like, I really think Moon Knight, if you took the best of the six episodes and made it, like, the fifth episode of this series, I thought was some of Marvel at its best.
You don't get that in a movie, though.
I think you do. I think that's the end of the second act. You don't get an hour. I didn't need an hour of it. I haven't, outside of Loki, really felt that the 6, 7, 8 episode run of these Marvel series is justified.
Yeah.
It's not to say that it doesn't have its moments. It's not to say that Oscar Isaac isn't Emmy worthy, and I do think he's Emmy worthy, and I'm not throwing that around lightly. And that's speaking as someone who did not overtly love this series. Emmy-worthy work from Oscar Isaac. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that I'm not intrigued about the concept of seeing him, you know, interweaved within the MCU moving forward. It's just to say, and Sean and I were talking about this. Gabe, I want you to help me, like, figure out how to properly utilize this as a criticism.
Okay.
Which is that I just genuinely feel like my enthusiasm for Marvel is waning. I really feel that once we hit Endgame, like a switch in me flicked off, and where I sort of feel like, okay, like that's the end, and then everything else just sort of feels like, oh, we're still going, and No Way Home was an anomaly because of bringing in the nostalgia factor of Toby and Andrew. Like, that's that, you know, that my excitement for that is not representative or indicative of my excitement for Marvel as a whole. It just sort of feels like I'm kind of like, I'm even at a point where, like, when WandaVision was coming out, and even when Loki was coming out, I was, like, making a point to, like, wake up and try to see it or avoid spoilers or stay off Twitter. Now I'm kind of in this sort of, like, I hope I don't have it ruined for me, but if it happens, it happens. Like, you know, I'll get around to watching it. Like, I had to, like, make a point to rush through the past few episodes to even be able to do this episode of Real Blend. And I just don't know what's wrong with me. It's not to say that, like, I'm not excited to see Doctor Strange, and obviously, like, I'm excited to see Thor, and like, you know, I'll be there, but as of now, it feels like when I get around to it, as opposed to, like, get out of my way, I'm first in line, and I feel like I gotta figure out how to review this stuff. I just does that make my reviews unfair moving forward?
No, I mean, I think that's the baggage that anyone could come in with. Like, that's what, you know, we say reviews are not objective, they're subjective. And right now your subjective perspective is kind of being, you know, we were talking about fatigue and such, like, that's a bit of fatigue. Like, you're just kind of not into it.
I don't have Star Wars fatigue. Now, granted, I didn't like Boba Fett. Yeah, I didn't like Boba Fett, but, like, I'm back to being jacked about Obi-Wan. So maybe we're, like, one Marvel equivalent of Obi-Wan away.
Well, okay, right? here's the comparison. Marvel came out of the gate with their heaviest hitters of characters, mm-hmm. And now they're into what the mainstream audience would consider some more B-tier.
Sure.
You know, and even C-tier level heroes.
But I didn't know who the hell Guardians of the Galaxy were before that movie came out.
No, and that worked, for sure. But, like, you're geeked for Obi-Wan because you know Obi-Wan. And he's a big character.
Sure.
You know,
in that mythology. And Darth Vader is literally coming back.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe
there's that. It's almost the equivalent of, like, a series that brings back Downey as Iron Man.
Here's what I'll say, and I think Jake and I were talking about this just before we were recording. It still feels like we're in, to give Marvel the benefit of the doubt that, you know, this giant corporation that makes billions of dollars at a time needs a benefit of a doubt. But we're still very much in the refractory period of like post-Endgame in the universe. Like the storytelling itself, we will talk about Doctor Strange, but Doctor Strange in many ways is still very much a response to the events of Infinity War and Endgame. Mm-hmm. And for better or worse, that I think is why you feel that way. I kind of might feel that way. I think that's why we feel that way is because we're not building towards a new big thing necessarily, mm-hmm. or at least it's not as obvious.
Yeah.
And so whether they're good or not, or, you know, they're just good enough, they're exciting, they're entertaining, they don't have that added factor of mystery of like what's going to come next. It's still in that mode of like the denouement of Endgame, of kind of like these characters responding to this thing, which is fair because, you know, it's giving credit to how monumentous that event was to these characters that they need to have a response.
Yeah.
But I think that's sort of the crux of it, is we're still building up to whatever Blade is, and we're still building up to whatever Moon Knight might do next. Like, we're still building up to what I think this next thing is going to be. Let's talk a little bit about that, because Sean, you mentioned like,
I just wanted to be like open and honest about like where I was mentally and emotionally about
this. I feel similarly. I still get excited about Marvel stuff, but I do feel similarly of like, okay, yeah, I think we're just not in the prime zone.
Element of like, there's new characters that are introduced in the end credits of both Eternals and Doctor Strange, which you'll find out. And it's not like, holy shit, that's Nick Fury, you know?
Yeah.
Or, oh my God, that's Thor's hammer.
But now it's more about like, oh, look, it's that actor playing a character that we don't know who the character is.
There's a bit of that.
A little bit. Yeah, I feel that.
What do you think about, I think what might happen with Moon Knight is we're not going to get another series. I don't necessarily see the benefit of that, but I've seen people discuss, and I don't know much about this. I know that there's a video game coming out, which often points to sort of where the larger MCU wants to go when they're trying to familiarize people with these characters. But the Midnight Suns, where Moon Knight doesn't get a Moon Knight movie, but we see Oscar Isaac show up in a team up movie, which Marvel really probably wants to prioritize, is that they have all these teams that they can do. They know that, you know, by the time they got to Civil War, they knew that, like, if we just make these Avengers movies, they'll do well because those are the most exciting bits for the fans. Mm-hmm. And looking at a list of those characters that have appeared in the comics, we have Blade, Doctor Strange, Ghost Rider, Captain America, which is, you know, obviously Carol Danvers, Wolverine, Morbius, who's a maybe, I guess, but also Moon Knight. Do you see that that's more kind of what these shows are going to do, is that they're just going to point, they're trying to build the block so that we don't need the origin story movie that everyone's kind of exhausted by in every single movie that comes out now that's a singular character's origin story where it follows that three-act structure, there's not much they can do or choose to do.
Yeah,
these shows allow them to tell a much more nuanced story, and then now they can just team them up, and we're not going to get Moon Knight movie. We're going to get Moon Knight with all these other characters that we've seen.
I think that's the case. Yeah. And it's almost like with the Netflix model where they introduced Daredevil, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Jessica Jones, and then it built to a Defenders series. Right. Under the model you're almost talking about, Defenders would have been a movie. Right.
Yeah.
And you met all those characters in other properties, and then it made sense to team them up that way. And it's interesting now with the MCU, like they're just sort of dropping people. Like Daredevil shows up in Spider-Man No Way Home. Now you know he's there. You could set up that you know, team-up movie that you're talking about where it becomes like Blade, Moon Knight. You could probably even pull the Punisher in at that point now, you know, because all of us kind of believe that it's canon. So yeah, it can do exciting sort of team-ups like that. And but we just don't know if that's where they're heading.
Yeah. Are there any final thoughts before we kind of do a tier list or like round this up?
You can't praise Oscar Isaac enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly believe that he gave one of the best performances that I've seen in the MCU.
Yeah. And what was demanded of him was more than most actors are demanded of in the MCU. And that's not a knock on the rest of the MCU as much as it is a compliment on on his ability as an actor.
Because if you try to do that character and it turns out wrong,
yeah,
it's really it would stand out.
Yeah, and potentially borderline offensive.
Could be,
sure.
But yeah. By the finale, he was seamlessly transitioning mm-hmm. between the characters.
Yeah,
like mid sentence.
Yeah,
achieve balance, especially was great.
And because he's so good, you knew exactly who he was. Yeah. You know, at each moment, and it was flawless.
Yeah. Reminiscent of the actor from Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes.
And what was required of him.
Yes, exactly. So I can't, like, I just wanted to throw a little bit more praise on Oscar.
No, absolutely. I agree. And I think I'll go ahead and pull up. So we are going to throw this on the tier list. I'll pull up the tier list here for the folks at home.
Can I come back into the conversation? So for people who are listening, I have stepped away from this conversation because I have not finished Moon Knight. Right. But I listened to what y'all were saying, so I'm not really too worried about spoilers. Based on the three of y'all's overall thoughts, I just want to guess this.
I'll write it down.
You guys do it.
I didn't quite get to say exactly. I very much enjoyed this series. I think I enjoyed the bulk of, if not every episode. I think it was cast really well. I think every character was really interesting. I like where it went. I like that we got to spend so much time learning about each of the versions of, you know, Mark Spector and Steven. I felt that the mystery going through it was great. I thought that Ethan Hawke was fantastic. And maybe this is controversial to say. For me, I'll let Kevin guess. I very much enjoyed this, and I don't have a lot of knocks against it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I might enjoy it. I think I definitely enjoy it more than Jake did. Sean, I'm not sure with what you've said. I'm not sure where you're going to put this. But I'll let Kevin guess where we're going to go.
I'm feeling this is a B.
Okay. Sean, where would you put it on this tier list? Or just on a tier? What tier would you give it?
Tier. This is the complicated part.
Yeah. It's regardless of what's already on there. It's when you think of this, where do you put it on your tier list? And then we average it out and it joins.
I gotta say
list.
A. I have to say A because of the really confident way they handled a complicated origin.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Ethan Hawke was phenomenal as Harrow, and I thought Oscar Isaac has given one of the best MCU performances I've seen. But for those reasons, I'm saying A.
I also say A, and it's a solid A for me. I think Loki and this do something different, but I have no problem putting them on the same caliber. Not that we're referencing this list, but I also think Loki is an A personally, and I think that they both achieve fantastic
storytelling. And what trips me up is when I see Hawkeye as a B, I'm like, it's so much better than Hawkeye, you know? So, yeah. But I know we can't compare that way. So,
right.
Jake, you going to fight us?
I don't think it's an A. Okay. I would say it's a B, but also it frustrates me at the idea of having it next to Hawkeye. But I also fought you guys on Hawkeye because I did not believe Hawkeye was a B. And I know we can't do that, but I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah.
I think Moon Knight is a B because for me, when it worked, and this is the difference between Moon Knight and Loki, when it worked really well.
Yeah.
But my problem is it just didn't always work for me. There were, I thought, in the six episode stretch, genuine chunks and periods where I was like, okay, come on, let's go, let's move this along, come on, like we don't really need, which is why I go back to the could have been a movie, you know, like the Zoom meetings that could have been an email, like it's just like it's mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to Loki, every single moment of Loki felt necessary and kept me engaged and attached. Was not the case with Moon Knight. You know, it's sort of the phone test, and there were a couple of moments I was like, okay, put my phone down. It's just sort of like, okay, I can pick up my phone during this moment. Like it just.
Interesting.
Didn't pass the phone test for me. So for me, it's a solid B because the stuff that works is fantastic, but not everything works.
I didn't have that issue. For me, I was enthralled throughout. I did want to ask you guys because I was anticipating it not going well just because it's so hard to do after so much build up. But the final the culmination of that final episode, I thought was awesome. And was a
it
great.
It just felt very Marvel for me. It just felt very like, okay, here we go. This is the Marvel thing.
I disagree.
I thought the fact that they had fights at two different scales and you'd see them fighting and then the giant gods behind them.
Kaiju level fights.
I thought was so clever and so cool. I thought the character designs of the gods were great and they looked great. I mean, we're talking about a TV show with this.
You know where it would have looked great on a big screen.
You know,
but that's all right.
Episode 5 alone of the series is a bigger swing than most television shows take, and it landed it. Like, episode 5 was really great.
Yeah.
Here's what I kind of said earlier, but a more finer point on why I disagree with you that it would be a movie. I think that you're not wrong that they could condense this into a movie, but I think if you got of the movie version of this origin story, you would complain about it the same way we complain about Captain Marvel or those other films that feel like phase one origin story, wash, rinse, repeat Marvel, where we'd get a bit of
this. I don't know. I feel like this would be an origin story that was nuts.
I think it is because they gave it 6 episodes, though. I think it is. I think if they had 2.5 hours to do it, there's so much you would lose that I feel like we would be complaining that it feels like a generic origin story because the structure would have to change so much.
You have to understand, and I think this is just representative of, again, my attitude toward Marvel right now. For those of us who are watching on YouTube, you can see the tier that we have made. I want to stick my hands in that tier
and shovel everything around.
Just bring a lot of it down.
Yeah.
Just bring, like, there's so much. I just wish I could stick my hand in that screen and just drag a majority of those movies down.
And again, that's the fun of this segment, is none of us are really happy because it's an average of all of ours.
You guys say that, but I find that I'm the one that is usually end up unhappy with this.
Jake? You're dragging the majority of this show down is what you're doing.
True.
With your negativity.
No, we have too many S's.
Can I just go back to doing premium trivia with Gabe? Because I was perfectly happy last week doing that.
All right, so
you guys both voted A, but it's an A. It's not. Oh, look at that. We have too many A's.
We do.
We have a lot of A's.
Can we go back?
When are we going to be done? They just said they're having a retreat to make 10 more years of this. We're going to be gray before they're done.
Yeah, is there ever a chance when we get to go back and collectively agree on a move? Is that part of the tier?
Maybe at like the end of a phase. Maybe we can talk about adding like at the end of what a current phase that we're at. We go back and like.
But
that's
Kevin Feige told Sean we're done with phases.
He did tell me that. Yes.
Okay. Well.
You like that? You like how I although we're in phase four.
All right. Well, here's our updated tier list. I'm going to let Sean throw us to Doctor Strange, but I'll go ahead and say this now. I'll say it in there because people are probably not looking at spoilers. We're not going to do Doctor Strange this week. We're going to do that next week, but I'll get into that segment.
All right. So let's head into our review of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And yet again, Jake is going to tap out because he has not seen it yet, and we are going to be able to talk spoilers.
So we are going to let's do a quick spoiler-free reactions for the folks at home just because it's opening weekend. And then for all you lovely listeners and watchers, we will give you a firm warning before we give spoilers. And I'll tell you all now for anyone who's going to dip out, we are not going to do the tier list for Doctor Strange this week. Jake is going to see it this weekend, so we're just going to hold off. And that way all four of us can tier list Strange together next week. But yeah, who wants to start off spoiler free? Go ahead.
I want to start spoiler free and say that something happened when we watched this movie, which was we came out of it and I defended it stronger than Kevin did because I liked it. I enjoyed the movie all the way through, had a good time with it. I was recognizing things that didn't work for me, but I was forgiving them because the things that were working, I enjoyed a lot more. And the more I thought about it, the more it came down for me. As I sort of processed a lot of stuff that was happening, and asked a lot of questions about like, oh yeah, but what did that mean kind of thing. So I came out of it on a high and I've since leveled off, and I'm probably now closer to where Kevin is, because he had some trepidations coming out of it. So without getting into spoilers just yet, I think it's a perfectly fine and fun Marvel movie. But it's not going to be one of the ones that sticks with me for a while, or, you know, accomplished a lot of stuff that wasn't already done in some other areas, specifically WandaVision and specifically the first Doctor Strange. It opens up a couple of different portals to where the stories can go, where the world can go. Yeah, no pun intended. But after sitting with it for a little bit, it's one of those MCU movies that came down a little bit as opposed to going up. What do you think?
I mean, this is a hard film for me to review because I'm such a Sam Raimi fan and I'm so appreciative of the little things that he puts into his films, whether it be camera movements, sound design, you know, there's a really big creative force that's happening in this film. My biggest problem here is that, and again, this is just kind of how I interpreted it, but as I'm watching the film, I felt like I was watching two dueling ideas and two dueling concepts that were basically fighting to become this one movie. And like, as the third act approaches, like, you're really getting like the horror Sam Raimi classic, like Evil Dead, Army of Darkness, Drag Me to Hell, like really interesting, like dark, violent, nightmarish aspects. But then there's just a lot of it that just felt like the MCU was then trying to come in and make their normal MCU storylines and movies. And I just think those two felt conflicted and never really understood what the movie wanted to be. It was like these two battles. And I think what I found interesting about the film is that the story, it's about the multiverse. It feels weirdly small. Like, I feel like they didn't really go anywhere in terms of like just what they could have done with this. Like, there's this one shot which is released in the trailer and a clip as well, where they're just like jumping through the multiverses and he like hits this paint multiverse and all these different things. Like, that's kind of what I was hoping this movie would be playing with a little bit more, is jumping in and out of these different universes. I don't want to go into too much detail, but they really kind of honed it in on this like smaller scale, and it just felt like almost like a 2-hour episode of WandaVision. And I say that because I liked WandaVision. The first three episodes were phenomenal. I didn't love when they left the TV show aspect of it, the land of the TV series or whatever. But this movie feels more like we're just continuing Wanda's story from WandaVision, which I know it is, but it felt more like a Wanda story about her grief over Paul Bettany and Vision and the kids versus a Doctor Strange story. I would argue that this, like, it's funny because like Doctor Strange to me in this movie feels like Doctor Strange's character and role of his importance in No Way Home, which is still a significant part of the story, obviously. But as I watched No Way Home, it's a Spider-Man movie. This feels like a Wanda film.
Why they didn't call it the Scarlet Witch.
Right, or Doctor Strange and the Scarlet Witch, or whatever they would have done with it. But I think, and again, this all comes whether or not you loved WandaVision. If you liked WandaVision, this is, to me, it feels like just another 2 hours of that show, really. And that being said, then you put Raimi in there. And I got to respect Marvel for allowing Raimi to still get that voice out there. I mean, it's a Sam Raimi movie for sure. That's battling with what an MCU movie should be or would be. And I think that was my biggest problem with it. And I think I still like the film. I'm at a 3.5 out of 5, but it's definitely problematic. I did not find the script to be good. Like, the dialogue is, there's a lot of bad dialogue in this film and a lot of bad exposition. On top of that, the story, I don't know what this film did in my mind that I couldn't have already been told in a 5 to 10 minute window in another film. Like, what occurred in this 2 hour and 10 minute window that really was mind blowing and changed the future of the MCU?
Sure.
Last thing I'll say is this, and this is I'm going to keep this vague for spoilers. I did not find the cameos interesting. I thought they were poorly written.
Well, I want to talk about that.
We can just save that for spoilers. Yeah. You can go into detail.
It pains me to say this about a Sam Raimi movie. Last thing I'll say is this: I miss Chiquino's score.
Yeah, totally. And the only time it stood out to me was when Elfman used Chiquino's bits.
Yes, there was like this like little bit where they start using like, there's like this famous like almost string aspect. And it was one of my favorite needle drops of that was in No Way Home. As we open the film, we're in Spider-Man, Peter Parker's world. Yep. And then when he goes to visit Dr. Strange, and right when we see the, what's this thing called?
The Sanctum Sanctorum.
The Sanctum. Right. Then you automatically hear that Chiquino, that like stringy instrument sound, and you go, oh, now we're entering Dr. Strange's world. And I love Danny Elfman and Elfman.
I don't think Elfman did anything that stood out.
It just didn't like I love Elfman's work on Spider-Man, obviously. And I think that him and Raimi have a great relationship, but it almost felt cartoony. And I know that's kind of what Raimi's bit is. It's like a cartoony, but also in a hardcore realm of horror. But Elfman's It just felt like a different Doctor Strange than I'd already been dealing with, and I just kind of didn't feel familiar enough with it to be interested in this story.
I hear you.
Let's go ahead and talk spoilers. So if you're at home, we are going to dive into spoiler talk. Look for our next section, which will be our Benedict Cumberbatch blend game. That is when we'll be out of spoilers, but you've been warned fairly enough, I think, that spoilers are coming. I will say, at the top of that, because I didn't quite give my spoiler-free thoughts, but that's fine. I don't want us to spend too much time. I do want us to get to the end credits and kind of what's moving forward before we move on. Mm. But I agree that the Wanda stuff didn't work for me, and I think maybe I just misread the post-credit scene of WandaVision. For me, I and someone who really enjoyed WandaVision, much more than Kevin did. So, you know, you would kind of set that up as like maybe you would enjoy this. For me, I thought that WandaVision, what had happened is she was dealing with her grief, she dealt with her grief, and she grew to become this more powerful right. being.
Yeah, the arc happened. Yeah.
Yes. And so when this movie steps in and it says, well, it's about Wanda's dealing with her grief, right. I feel like we're just. Yeah. I was really satisfied with the way that ended and that mm-hmm. she had moved on. And then the fact that we're sort of retreading this, I felt was a bit of a disservice to her as a character to sort of get a double note to ostensibly, again, we're in spoilers, seems to end her tenure in the MCU potentially.
I think so. The way that it's settled.
I felt that was a bummer because I love Wanda. I love that character. I think she's great in the character. She's great in this, and these moments are great. I wonder if maybe, you know, we've talked about how this is going to be, hey, is Marvel going to take the TV series as like you have to see them in order to see the movies or not? And I'm a little concerned that them doing a double note of the kind of the same sort of the same emotions that we get in WandaVision are repeated for this film is like for me a bad sign about their confidence that everyone saw WandaVision, you know, like or that they thought everyone was going to see WandaVision, because I feel like if you were very confident about that, you would say, let's do something else. But again, maybe I just misread the way that ended. Not looking back at that post-credit scene of WandaVision of her, like, you know, maybe there's more there of like, oh, she's evil now. I didn't quite get that. I just thought she had superpower. I thought she had just.
I sure didn't think she was going to be evil. No,
I thought she just leveled up and I was like, great. She got through her grief and that allowed her, you know, if the hex was this cocoon that she built for herself,
right.
She broke out of it in this series and now she's the Scarlet Witch. And she's going to be this awesome, powerful being. And then she just kind of got used as a, again, it's wonderful motivation. And I'm glad that Marvel can go there. The double note for me was a bummer.
And what bummed me out the most about it, too, because I would agree with you, the more I thought about the Wanda stuff in this movie, despite Elizabeth Olsen performing the hell out of it.
Fantastic.
Felt repetitive even in the course of the movie. Like it just kept being. Her looking in on alternate versions of a world where she could be with her kids. Right. And by the time we saw it like the third time, I was like, all right, enough. Like, how many times are we going to have to do this?
Like, I thought the same thing. And I was just like, and I get what they were going for. I get that they had to show her that the kids could be happy with their mom currently. I mean, that was drilled into me the second time she went to that place. You know what I mean? Right. And like, I just felt like they wasted
and the
so
moment,
much time.
I did love the moment when the alternate Wanda is like consoling her. She's having that moment at the end.
Yeah.
And she says like, know that they'll be loved. Like, it's fantastic.
Right.
It's fantastic. It is great. It's just marred by like, well, I saw, right. I had the line of what is grief if not love?
Yeah.
Persevering. Like I had that emotional beat. This is also another great version of that emotional beat.
And what's fascinating, a couple of things I want to jump into. I want to preface this by saying that I'm a comic book movie fan. I'm not a comic book fan. I mean, I don't read comics. So the Illuminati was something that I was not too familiar with. But that scene is so stacked with characters that are so large, especially with Krasinski's Reed character, because at the end of the day, what's happening in this moment is you're introducing a gigantic character from the Fox universe into the Marvel universe now, because Disney and Fox merged.
And Patrick Stewart, too.
Right. And so, like, to have Sir Patrick Stewart show up as Professor X and Krasinski to be introduced, I mean, see, Professor X isn't even as bad to me because we've already known him as X and he's just kind of there. it's really kind of the Krasinski one for me, because it just felt lackluster. That whole scene was written weirdly. I didn't like the staggered dialogue of how they all explained in one sentence each why he was there. It just felt like so orchestrated in a way that it didn't feel... The reveal felt like rushed and non-emotional. I didn't care. There was no stakes. But that being said, like, you know, there's a lot in there that I do love, and Gabe and I discussed this. I love this. There's a music fight that's so cool.
Yeah,
where they're basically, it's two Doctor Stranges, the evil, or the one and one, and then our guy, basically going back and forth with musical notes.
It's so cool.
It's such a great scene. Like that. Like it's so funny because like when that moment hits, I'm like, damn, this is so awesome.
I did want to reply to your criticism of the Raimi stuff, because I looked at it, I saw it differently. Not criticism of the Raimi stuff, but you described it as sort of like fighting Marvel. And I find that really interesting, because for me, to me it felt like it was a Marvel movie and you know, like the undead fist through the grave, it felt like Raimi was just punching through everyone. So I didn't see it as a fight. To me, it felt like I got these awesome Raimi. I got reminded that it was Raimi making it. If it had been any other filmmaker who was like doing Raimi bits, it would feel off.
But those moments were like few and far between, where it would like I know what you're saying, because like when that music thing hits, you go, damn, this is awesome.
It's that. It's the cackling spirits. It's the the fist. For me, it never felt like it was combative. To me, it always felt like they were just these great highlights that were, you know, ebbs and flowing throughout. So I thought it was an interesting note that you gave, because for me it was
those moments
feel
were
like
so
fighting.
Much better than but don't you find it fascinating that we both equally came to a conclusion of how awesome those moments were?
Yeah, and we're Raimi fans, and I think we're right. Filmmaking nerd. Like the average person's not going to go like, oh, I feel like I'm watching Army of Darkness for these 10 seconds. Right. Like that's part of the high that we get. That's not necessarily common.
Black Bolt having his mouth sealed so that his inside head explodes
straight out of The Boys.
Dope as shit.
Yeah, that was like Matrix meets The Boys, basically. Like the mouth will close, I'm like, that's Neo. And then
I love that they when she's covered in the oil from the machines or whatever.
Yeah.
But it looks like blood. Like that's how they get away with it not being blood. But it just looks like she's covered in blood. Like they get the horror imagery without, you know.
Well, and
getting
Captain
the R rating.
Carter got severed in half by a shield.
I was surprised how violent it was.
That was beautifully shot, by the way. Kevin, if you rewatch it, or if you remember, the way that I took note of it in the moment where I was like, what a like, that's what you get when you hire someone like Sam Raimi's caliber,
right.
who came up through, you know, not having enough.
Like body means. Horror. Like,
Horror, but like he came up with having a minimum budget. Like he is economic, if anything. That's the thing that he learned first with his craft. The way that they cut that together, you never see her cut in half, but he lets her move in a way that you recognize as someone being sliced in half, and then it drops and it's just a bloody shield. It is a PG-13 movie. It never leaves the PG-13, but you in your mind see a human body cut in half in a Marvel movie.
Which, and Gabe's point there is fascinating, because to me that's actually even more violent in a weird way.
Yeah, exactly. Because the Jaws thing,
right, and I always go to 7 because like, to me, 7 was another so horrifying because you never saw the kills. They were just the aftermath. And then like when the guy's explaining lust, like his description of lust in 7 is more horrifying than anything I could have seen Fincher put to screen with that. Because and to Gabe's point, that Captain Carter moment is really brutal. Like it feels like there's also a moment. I'm trying to remember who was it. Chiwetel who gets impaled.
Remember, no, like, Benedict. It was the other Benedict. He gets thrown out of the thing and lands on the spikes.
I mean, at the end of the day, there's a line at the end of the film. We're still in spoilers here, so there's a warning up. That kind of sums up the insanity of the film. When I can't remember who says it to Strange, but they're like, I think it's Benedict Wong. He's like, are you talking about the moment when you dream walked into your corpse and started like the way he says
zombie Benedict is so great.
Yeah. Like I did that. But don't you find that interesting? Like how nonchalant that line was. And then you go, oh, that is kind of crazy that they just did that. What I will say about that, and this is maybe a criticism, is that there was so much going on in the film and so much happening at once. It was so convoluted that I was having a hard time kind of like following it. But and the difference, Gabe, you saw Everything Everywhere All at Once, right?
No, I haven't seen it yet. We can discuss that later. Yeah,
I'll keep it brief. But that movie's a multiverse film. And that movie is supposed to put you in a mindset where you feel frantic and then it finds its lane. That's done on purpose. This felt frantic just because it didn't, in my opinion, know what it wanted to be. So, like, that joke, that line about, like, hey, when you dream walked into your corpse, I didn't even think about that being part of what actually happened in the story because it was so much going on. It was when Benedict said that line, I go, oh, that's what Raimi just did. Because okay. It was just so lost. It was just, I don't know.
I love that bit. I thought Zombie Strange was great, and the fact that his cloak was the spirits and stuff.
What does the end mean?
One
with the eye.
I'll explain it.
Before we get to that, one thing, and Sean is going to take us through this segment with what's next. One thing that we haven't discussed that I want to is the character of America Chavez. I thought was awesome. Her power is super sick. I'm excited to see what she does next. The actor who was in the Babysitter's Club or something I haven't seen. I was not familiar with her. Thought she was phenomenal. We hadn't touched on that yet. She's in it quite a bit, but not, you know, massively. She's an important part of the story.
She's the key of the story.
She's the key of the story. And I thought she was great in it. I thought the character was really cool. And I'm excited to see more from her. I thought her powers were really cool. I was worried, like, when we first saw the shape of her, I was like, is this going to feel it? I fell right into it. I thought it was so cool. And the way that she's like punching through different realities, with the fact that Marvel's going through multiverse, you know, it seems like that's what we're going to be in for the next bit. Mm. She seems like she's going to be important to that. And she was great.
But at the end of the day, Everything Everywhere All at Once is a better multiverse film than this movie.
All right, Sean, can you walk us through sort of in credit scene and kind the of, very last, of what's going
to
be next?
So the very last shot of the movie was very confusing to me in the moment. It's one of those things I had to think about at the time. So it's Benedict walking casually on the streets of New York City after finishing everything. And then he collapses and the eyeball shows up in his forehead. And everyone's like, okay, what the hell does that mean? And Kevin and I talked about it after the fact. And we were like, does that mean that the Strange that he almost defeated, that he saw in the dark world, is now him? Like, did we miss a switch up at some point? But I think it's just the repercussions of, they talked throughout the movie that if you mess with the Darkhold and you dabble in its power, it's going to impact you. It's going to change you in a way. Yeah,
I think that's the hold in the Darkhold.
So that's going to be whatever that third eye means for Strange. That's going to be him moving forward. Because to that end, when you get to the only mid-credit scene that matters in terms of plot, the revelation of Clea, who is a popular character from the Doctor Strange comics and eventually becomes a bit of a love interest, being played by Charlize Theron. She gives the line of like, are you afraid of something? Well, Strange has just been told to face his fears by Christine. So he says, not at all. The eye appears on his forehead, showing us a new power that Doctor Strange potentially is going to have moving forward. And then they go into it. My reaction to Charlize Theron being cast as Clea was, all right, I guess. Right. It feels like, you know, Harry Styles gets introduced at the end of Eternals, and you're like, all right, I guess we'll figure out what that means moving forward. I have no idea what that means for her moving forward. And I just a little bit feel, with all due respect to Charlize Theron, that that's uninspired casting. She's been in so many franchises between the Fast and the Furious, her being in Mad Max. I just didn't think that was like, oh yeah, that's the person you should get for Clea. I'm not saying that I know who they should have gotten instead, but when I saw that she was cast, I was pretty surprised at how underwhelmed I was.
I have one question and then we do need to move on, because you boys have to go interview Tom Cruise. Do we know where Doctor Strange shows up next? Is Doctor Strange 3 the only thing we can point towards?
No, because like we said, like, you know, it feels like they can crisscross and pop up almost anywhere. Sure,
but we don't have an insight into what that might be yet, right?
No, like, not right now.
Okay.
Not right now. It could be a while before we see him based on everything that's been announced.
Cool.
All right. Well, that leads us into our blend game, where we continue to talk about Doctor Strange through the character of Benedict Cumberbatch. We are going to, for this week, briefly run through this because, as Gabe pointed out, we're all trying to get to Tom Cruise. So I'll go first with my Benedict Cumberbatch pick, and it could only be Sherlock. His interpretation of Sherlock is so incredible that it's one of those. So this was around the time when streaming was starting to ramp up, And now we're at the point where every couple of weeks someone's like, oh, did you see this thing on streaming? And you get into like an Ozark or some sort of show that everybody's sort of binging. And it was when Sherlock came out, I honestly said to myself, like, I don't need another interpretation of Sherlock like this. It's been done so many different times. And I think at that time, too, there was one with Lucy Liu that was on CBS, and it felt like just a weekly procedural. But I finally put it on one time, and it was so perfect. Like, his interpretation of the modernization of Sherlock and the way that Benedict played him was so brilliant. And I was just hooked. And they're 90-minute episodes, so it feels like you're getting like little shortish Sherlock movies. And they're all tremendous, and I wish they just made 1,000 more of them, because they were tremendous, tremendous stories and interpretations. The way they brought in Moriarty was really fantastic, and his interplay with the kid from The Hobbit, who I'm blanking on, who's the guy from The Hobbit?
Martin Freeman. Short?
Thank you. Martin Freeman. Hysterical, though. Martin Short in The Hobbit. Terrific chemistry. Amazing chemistry between the two of them. And, you know, it's Benedict's probably going to always be known for Doctor Strange, but I think that his portrayal of Sherlock was genius. And I love it, love it, love it. So, Jakey, where would you go for Benedict?
I'm going him as Doctor Strange in Infinity War.
Ooh, nice.
I think and that's a specific moment, because I feel like that's the most different, interesting way. And granted, I have not seen Multiverse of Madness yet, but I love... I mean, and it's funny because it's almost indicative of how I feel Benedict Cumberbatch feels about it. But it almost feels like Doctor Strange is annoyed to be in a Marvel world, in the same way that sometimes I sort of feel Benedict Cumberbatch isn't entirely into the whole. Like, it just feels like he's the kind of actor that's tired of being asked about Infinity Stones and Thanos. That, you know, he wants to be asked about projects like Sherlock and Power of the Dog.
I think that he opens up his bank app and he's pretty okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's, you know, it's, but it kind of goes to that, like.
He doesn't care about superpowers, dog powers.
It just reminds me of that that great Michael Caine quote where he says, "I've never seen Jaws 4, but I've seen the house it paid for."
Sure.
But his Doctor Strange, particularly in Infinity War, seeing the foil between him and Tony Stark, kind of you know, watching his interactions with the different other members of the MCU, you know, dealing with, you know, the kid that is Peter Parker. I thought he handled it very well. And that was really at a period of time where it was still Captain America's and Iron Man's and the OG's like game. It was still very much them. Now, at this point, it kind of feels like Doctor Strange has sort of slipped into like the main role in the MCU. But at that point, Doctor Strange and Benedict very much was a supporting role in the MCU. And he really stood his ground in that. Mm-hmm. And just that moment at the end, when it just, you know, him holding up the one finger, kind of this acceptance of like, look, this is the way it's got to be.
Yeah.
And he communicated so much in that moment. And I know I feel bad, like now, like him holding up the finger has turned into like a GIF or like a meme that people use for humor purposes. But like, that was such a powerful moment in that movie. Kind of where like he and Tony had to come to terms with like what was happening in this moment. And again, I'm such an Infinity War fan because I love this idea that like not the heroes don't always win. And that moment of acceptance, like him raising the finger, Cap saying like, oh God, when he realizes like half the people have dusted, like all those moments of like acceptance of like, here, this is what's happening. I loved it. But you're absolutely spot on about his Sherlock. His Sherlock is incredible.
Kev, where'd you go?
I mean, you guys know how much I love Scott Derrickson's Doctor Strange. I think that Benedict's arc in that film is brilliant. And I think what I love about the Marvel films overall is that there's a genuine performance that goes into all of these characters and you care about them. And it's not just a superhero. It's a genuinely 360, full-bodied, built individual who's going through whatever arc they're going through. So when Doctor Strange opens the first movie, not only did I think that film had, and again, this has nothing to do with Cumberbatch, but some of the most impressive visual effects I've ever seen. As the film opens and we're just kind of in that surgery, right? And he's like going back and forth with that guy about the year an album came out. And it's just that moment that confidence, that over that cockiness that he had, and what needed to happen to break him, what needed to happen to bring him towards that path. And I just really loved that journey. I thought his car crash scene is one of the more brutal moments that I've seen in the MCU, just the way he hits that, the way that accident scene is horrifying. And just to think about what happens to his hands and his everything during that. And then there's this really cool shot that Derrickson does as he wakes up that's a little off kilter as his hands are kind of like in those casts. And it's just like the defeat element of what happens to him and then how he goes on his journey. His accent as Doctor Strange is, I think, one of the best American accents I've ever heard. I love the way he plays that accent. Emotionally, I think the beauty of what Multiverse of Madness does is it kind of makes you understand how much he wishes he could have had a relationship with Rachel McAdams' character. And kind of this film, the first film, was really kind of him pushing her away because he emotionally, psychologically lost the thing that makes him the most happy. So he's pushing everyone else that he loves around him away because he can't be happy himself. And I just think the character is tortured in a very interesting way that I love his arc. And I love Giacchino's score. I love the way he plays with that. Chiwetel's great. Tilda Swinton and Benedict are great in that movie. I think it's top 10 MCU for me. I love that movie. I'll always defend it. Not that it got bad reviews, but I don't think it's considered to be great in the grand scheme of the MCU by a lot of people. And I actually think it's one of the more underrated. And I think he's just incredible in it. To me, I will tell you right now, that's not an easy performance. Like, this guy came from heavy British characters, heavy drama prior to this. And then to jump into this world and actually fully realize a character and make me go on his journey. I knew nothing about Doctor Strange going into that film. I mean, I knew the character existed, but he made me, and Derrickson's love of the character made me fall in love with that concept of who he is. And I always think it's great that he's not the Sorcerer Supreme. I think that's such a cool aspect of him and Benedict and kind of how that arc plays out later. But yeah, that's my number one.
Audience picks: Alistair, Hately, Emma, and Harry Lichtman. And also Ben Koontz went with Doctor Strange. Cam McKinney, Jeff Cabrera, and several others went with The Imitation Game.
Yeah.
And I find this very hard to believe, but at least two people, Kelly and Connor Brosnahan, went with Khan from Star Trek and Into Darkness. And
He plays
you.
Khan?
I don't believe you. Yes.
Yes. Spoiler alert. Do you knock his performance? The movie.
The handling of it is what annoys me. He's good in it, but it was the whole like, he's not Khan. Wink.
That's fair. Yes. I'm judging the movie and not his performance. So, all right. I'm sorry, Kelly and Connor. I apologize to you. For next week, reach out on Twitter using the hashtag WhenIWas10Blend.
Yes.
So when you were 10 years old, what was your favorite movie? Everyone knows mine was Gone with the Wind, but I want to hear from you guys.
Dude, Gone with the Wind out when you were 10.
Yeah, come on. It was something, again, it was something from the Lumiere brothers, right?
Let us know your pick via email at
realblend@someone.com. The one the ship goes into the eye of the moon.
Yeah.
We have to get going, so please drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. Our next premium episode is going to be a fun game we're going to play called Taglines. So again, check your descriptions below for more information on how you can sign up to get premium episodes of Real Blend. Until then, you can follow us on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean_O'Connell, at Gabe Kovach. And the show is at Real Blend. We will probably have some photos and video and fun stuff from the red carpet for Top Gun. So until then, when we get to talk about Top Gun Maverick and more things coming to multiplexes near you very soon, keep it right here for Real Blend.
Larry Tom Cruise!
Hockey pads!
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's C-O-R-I-E-N-T.com. Corient.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.